Good morning, my friends. I would like to look at this chapter called I Am the Vine in the book Living the Infinite Way by Joel S. Goldsmith. It is pretty important. I also find it fascinating that Joel himself said to, for any new student, to start with the book Living the Infinite Way. So this is the first book that he suggests an Infinite Way student start with. And yet, for those that have eyes and ears, you can see that even here, he could not keep his knowledge, his wisdom of resurrection and ascension out of the material, because it's here. It's all throughout here. And we know that he was an example of someone that did ascend out of personal self, at first in his meditations, and then I feel even while he was walking around. Anyway, the chapter is chapter 6, I Am the Vine. So let us enter into it. Have yourself a little meditation. Ask that God reveal to you what you need to see and hear. Trust in your own inner self, the eye of your being, to reveal the principle. It says, somewhere back in the days of our old theological beliefs, we were under the impression that God's goodness to us depended upon our being worthy or deserving, and that if we were bad or had sinned, God withheld our good. That's a big problem for many people, the belief in a God of, well, duality, really. There's God, big bad God, and I have to do something to please him, and I don't know what it is. But I could have more supply if I knew how to please God. Maybe it's the right prayer, or maybe it's the right church, or the right book, or the right tape. If I order 57 tapes, maybe in there somewhere is the right tape. I've done that in the early days. If anything should be clear, it should be this, says Joel. God is love. God is law. God is principle. God is. Now, if you stop to think about it, and I've taken it into contemplation and meditation. You, your little personal self, cannot move the infinite. Have you ever been up in a plane? Have you ever taken a ride in a jet and looked out the window? And look down at the ground and the patchwork quilt that it looks like because we build everything in squares. Have you ever looked down there? Have you seen? Perhaps you've been even higher up. Perhaps you've seen some of the pictures from outer space. Oh, I'm sure you have if you watch TV or go to the movies. You know that picture where you're way out in space and moving towards the planet Earth and then down into the city and down into the city block and down into the building and inside the building and boom, there starts the movie. Well, when you're out there in outer space and you're looking at planet Earth, a little ball of light, a little blue marble, think of a micro dot on that planet. And now think of the infinite. Now, how is that microdot going to move the infinite or persuade the infinite to do something for it? The concept is ridiculous. But that's what we were taught in over the centuries. If you're really, really good, God will bless you. And if you're evil, you will be cursed. But I am here to tell you, you cannot move the infinite. You can't move the infinite with your behaviors, with your thoughts, and not even with your prayers. A personal sense of self cannot move an impersonal God. Well, that feels kind of helpless, doesn't it? Now what? If my prayers don't influence God, why am I praying? Many, many years ago, and you've all heard this, I was in between falling asleep and waking up. I was almost asleep, but not quite there. I could still hear the clicks in the house as it settled down. I could hear my own breathing. But I was almost ready to drift off. And suddenly a voice inside said, God needs no prayer. God already is. Man needs prayer in order to let God is. And suddenly I jumped up and went out into the living room, and next to my meditation chair was a pad of paper, and I wrote that down. And eventually in the first book that I wrote, there's a chapter called Let God Is, which deals with that. But essentially, the principle is God is. God is forever ising. The sun is shining right now. I can see it through the skylight in my room upstairs here. And if I want to feel that sunshine, I know from experience I can walk down these stairs. I can walk into the living room, out the front door, across the porch, down the front porch steps, and out on the sidewalk, and I will feel that sun all over my body. Now, that has nothing to do with praying, holding the right thoughts, begging, beseeching. It's just walk out into the sun if you want to feel it. So God is forever ising. How do I, the person, experience God ising? And the answer is so simple and yet so difficult. In order to experience God ising, God doesn't need my prayer for that. So I can put aside all prayers that God will somehow move into my life, because it's not going to happen. I cannot channel or funnel God into my life. That little micro dot cannot influence and push the infinite. But on the other hand, none of my so-called bad behaviors can prevent God from ising. Yes, they can prevent me from experiencing that ising, because while I'm busy doing these bad things, or while I'm busy doing these good things, I may be going all over the country helping those less fortunate. Perhaps I've set up a foundation or a charity for those less fortunate. Well, that's doing good, isn't it? Shouldn't then I be able to experience God ising? Not necessarily. It's the same on both sides. Well, then how? How can I experience the isness of God? And that's what this chapter is about. He says, can we accept the fact that God is love? Not God is love if we behave a certain way. Not just when we are worthy or deserving. Can we accept the fact that God is love? Well, I'm going to give you the secret. You can jot this down. It's the secret to life. It's the entire secret. I'm going to give it to you right now. All you have to do to experience God-ising is for you, the personal sense of self, you must die so that God can live. That's it. That's the whole secret to life. You must die. I die daily. And daily experience the isness of God. Says Joel, at no time in his ministry did Jesus withhold healing, supply, forgiveness, restoration, reformation, because of anyone's unworthiness. The principle is this. Now, when I hear Joel say that, my ears perk up. I pay attention. Because if there's a principle here, it's a principle across the board for everyone, everywhere. Since God is love, our good must be infinite, without any ifs, ands, or buts. God's grace is not dependent upon something that you or I do or do not do. The grace of God cannot be withheld. We can turn electricity on or off. We can turn water on or off. But we cannot start or stop the flow of God. God is. So you see, we have our theological beliefs that something I did back there when I was 12, and I went into the store, and when the manager wasn't looking, I stole that candy bar, and I never paid for it. Maybe I peeked into the girls' locker room, or whatever it is that you did, and you still remember, and you're blaming yourself for. Maybe I withheld something from my sister. She asked me to forgive her, and I wouldn't do it. Something. Maybe you cheated your partner out of his share of the business, and he went off and had to start over, and you kept the entire business for yourself. Who knows what it is? In our minds, because of the theological training we've had, we feel that that is why God's not operating in my life. Or we take the other side of the coin and we say, I'm reading all these books. I've set this time aside every week for God. I'm tithing. I'm giving a little percentage of my income to a spiritual enterprise, spiritual activity, or I'm giving to the poor. I'm doing these things, so why is God not easing in my life? See, it's two ends of the same stick, whether you're good or bad. Consider this principle, says Joel. God is life. Why is this not so at 60, 90, or 120? And here it comes. The reason is that the words I, me, and you enter the picture. And we say, my life. And immediately we think of the date on a birth certificate. Yes. God is not easing in my life, whether I'm good or bad, because it's my life. It's a personal sense of life. God is, and God is easing, but I'm not aware of it. I'm busy over here living a personal life and trying to get God into that personal life. Oh, please send me some supply. Let's see now, what's the right principle for supply? If I practice, that supply will show up and I'll have money. What's the principle for companionship? I must know this principle of companionship. If I practice this, the right person will show up and I'll have love. What is the principle for health? Come on, teach me the principle. I must know the principle for healing. Now practice this principle and health will show up. I'll feel better. In all of those cases, you have a personal sense of self trying to add God to their humanhood. And it doesn't work. God is the only life, and that life is infinite. The life of God is infinite. So we can forget your age and my age. In the same way, God is love. So let us forget your conduct and my conduct. Ah. That means we can forget all about your conduct and my conduct, because it doesn't influence the isness of God. All of that is superstition. That's a personal sense of self trying to be good. He says, God is power. Can God then withhold help, supply, or peace from anyone? No. But you and I can block it by bringing in the words I, me, and you. I may not be deserving. I may not be ready. I may not have enough understanding. But it's not dependent on I, me, or you. He says, as we go into the healing work, we can never heal through our understanding. No, because that would be a person healing. God forbid, he says, that God's presence should be dependent on our understanding. You see, it's not even your understanding that brings God to you in your meditation. Healing is an activity of the Christ. It is an activity of God's understanding. And we have been thinking in terms of my life, my health, my supply, my worthiness, my understanding, and these are not involved at all. It is God's life, God's health, God's supply, God's worthiness, God's understanding. Yes, you see, healing is an impersonal activity. It's not something a person can do. Hence, Joel's saying, how would you heal if you could not use the mind? An answer? You would not heal. Christ would. And then you'd really have healings, because it wouldn't be a little personal mind there trying to bring it about. He says, the moment we open our consciousness to the flow of God and stop all this nonsense about our understanding, our good or bad behavior, we can be assured the flow of God will erase and purify whatever error or deed is in our thought. Okay, so in other words, the flow of God will erase a personal sense of life. He says it right here, the flow of God will erase and purify whatever of error is in our thought. And a personal sense of life is error. We must come out from the old Judaic ideas and beliefs of a God of punishment and reward. God is. So, does that mean that Now we're given carte blanche and we can just do whatever we want to because we don't have to worry about it now. Our conduct cannot influence God, so God is zizzing, I might as well go down to the bank there and steal some money. Or maybe nothing that obvious. I'll just cheat a little on my taxes, or I'll just tell some white lies. It doesn't affect God's zizzing. So what is there to worry about it? Well, there's only one problem with that. And that is, you're still thinking in terms of what I can do. Well, I'll just cheat a little. I'll just jack these prices up a little more for my products. I'll just take advantage of the labor I have and not pay them quite as much as they should be getting. They should be grateful to have a job in this economy. What all of that has to do with I, me, mine. Speaking of workmen, we've got a few workmen here working outside on our back staircase. Alright, so, this does not give you carte blanche. You are not able now to do whatever you want because there's no such thing as karma. That's only a half truth. That's a half a truth. There's no such thing as karma to the impersonal Christ. The personal sense of self still lives under the law and not by grace. You remember in the beginning of every one of these books, Joel has his little paragraph from The Infinite Way, which ends in the illumined walk without fear by grace. So, and it starts with, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. So if you are still building a personal life from a personal sense of self, you most definitely are under the law. And the law is, as you sow, so shall you reap. And so every place that you're cheating, every place that you're lying, every place that you're stealing is going to come back upon you, heaped up, pressed down, and running over. But it's you yourself who set the ball in motion. Now, to come out from under the law, or to be free of the wheel of life, as Buddha called it, cause and effect, all you have to do is die. Die to a personal sense of self. Then, and then only, is there no karma. Because when you've died to the personal, the impersonal is living you. Actually, it's living itself where you appear to be. So he says, Joel says, of this we must be sure. God is not influenced by man. God is not influenced by individual you. God is light, and if we walk out into the light, we will be in it. God is pouring forth its infinite grace, but because of I, me, and mine, we are not accepting it. So there must be some way to accept God's light. There must be some way to accept God's love. There must be some way to accept God's life. And that is why he is saying here, we must drop this belief that we play a part in obtaining God's love or God's grace. The only part we play is to accept it by opening our consciousness to receive it. And when you open your consciousness to receive it, well, how do you open your consciousness to receive God's grace? There's only one way to open consciousness, and that's to get I, me, and mine out of there. It's to die in your meditation to a personal sense of self reaching out to God somewhere. or even reaching into God somewhere. You must die to a personal sense of self, which is why he suggests a few years later in the Kailua Study Series that you simply grit the teeth, go within, and wait. Wait upon the Lord. Because sooner or later, in your meditation, you will die out of a personal sense of waiting. You will stand stock still. You see, the glorious silence within is not an emptiness of sound. The silence within is an emptiness of self. No self is there. And then when no self is there, no personal self is there, in that silence, in that stillness, there's a movement. Spirit, I, Christ, God is. And you become aware of it. You feel it. You see it. You know it. You know God aright. And you know your own life eternal. So he says, the writings of the Infinite Way contain hundreds of truths, but actually there is only one truth that we must know, the nature of God. Take this one thought into meditation. What is God? And then let God reveal itself. Try to empty the already too full vessels, because they cannot be filled with the new wine. What is the new wine? Something that's not a thought nor a thing. Be willing to begin all over. And this is what I had to do and still have to do on some days. I have to be willing to start all over. I don't know anything. You do not know God, or you would be showing forth more of God's grace. Forget all that you have thought or been taught, and start afresh with the question, what is God? And so he's giving you a cone there, K-O-A-N, to take into your meditation. He's gently suggesting that you don't know anything, and nothing that you know with the mind will bring forth this ising. You cannot influence God as a person, but by your emptiness, when there's no person, then there's an opening and God functions. And you don't even have to ask. You don't have to pray, God, will you please is? Will you please is here? No. Your prayer, as was revealed to me within, is to remind yourself to die. Your prayer is to stand stock still. And then you become aware of God ising. God was ising before, but you weren't aware of it. You were living this personal life. He says, it may be perfectly true that there is not much love coming in or going out from us, but that has nothing to do with God. It has to do with the false belief that if only we can find the magic formula, in some way we can start God's good flowing. And every time I think that way, or catch myself thinking that way, I imagine that microdot on planet Earth in an infinite cosmos trying to push that infinite into doing something. That's ridiculous, isn't it? No, but you can attune yourself with it by dying. And so we must die to a personal sense of self in order to experience the impersonal. He says, the Master told us that truth is the comforter. He did not say that God would send a limited amount of comfort. He said the comforter, the wholeness of the comforter. All this time we have been satisfied with a small portion because we have believed that is all we earned or deserved. You see, the false sense of self feels it has earned or deserved this, or it hasn't earned or deserved this yet. I'm telling you, none of that has anything to do with it. Those are false beliefs. An old theology picked up over the centuries. Thou hast sinned, and God will not come to you. Or thou hast done a good work, and God will bless you. All that's nonsense. It's superstition. He says, God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. Can you see God as the great love of the universe, in whom is no hate, envy, jealousy, malice, revenge, or even remembrance of the past? Yes, and another one that I like is, God is too pure to behold a personal sense of self. God sees perfect God itself. Now, God looks and sees God, because God is infinite. What else could God see? God cannot see a personal sense of self. It's you that's seeing a personal sense of self, one that God did not create. That's a mind creation and exists only in the mind. But you have decided you're going to die out of that mind, out of that tomb, out of the second chapter of Genesis, out of that false creation. So he says, it is only the belief that you are or are not doing something that is causing sickness and sin in the flesh. It is only the belief that the error lies within you, and it does not. So please try to remember this truth. Man can never influence God. God is, and God's grace endureth forever. Eliminate the use of I, me, and mine. You see how subtly he did this? Joel did not say on these pages, you have to die. You're going to die today, and then you'll experience God. That would have been too much of a shocker. So he gently said, eliminate the use of I, me, and mine in your vocabulary. But if you look at it, and you really look with eyes and ears that see and hear, on every page he's saying, die to a personal sense of self, a false sense of self. Die out of that. Come out of that tomb. See, he means this. Eliminate I, me, and mine. He means it. He says, there is no one on this earth great enough to make God do more than God itself is doing, and no sin great enough to stop God from being God. So, we know all of that is superstition. It's just superstition. It is age-old beliefs that have been handed down and handed down and handed down. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of sick and tired of them. I don't want them anymore. Nor do I want the self that entertains them. Nor do I want the belief in a really nice human life. I do not want that false sense of life anymore. So, he brings us to the 15th chapter of John. I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Abide in me, and I in you. I'm skipping part of this because it's fairly long. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit, for without me ye can do nothing. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. So shall ye be my disciples, if you abide in me. And so the 15th chapter of John teaches us to surrender the false sense of self, the I, the me, the mine, this personal sense of life that lives to 70 years and dies. Surrender it now. Die out of it now. First, in your meditation, realize that no personal self is present. And so stand still. Stop fighting. Let God is. And if you really find this silence where no personal sense of self exists, you will bear witness to the first chapter of Genesis, to consciousness expressing itself. And how wonderful that spiritual experience will be to you. You just will not believe how wonderful it is when you are able to see and know firsthand God is love, God is life, God is ising. Then, of course, when you know that, your search is over. Now it's just a matter of dying completely, even when eyes are open, to any personal sense of self here in me, or any personal sense of self there in you, to any me or you, to where, like Joel, it's not easy to stop seeing human beings, but I finally made it. He says, now go back to, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman, ye are the branches. And he tells you to visualize a tree trunk, from which grow many branches. Now, remove the trunk. All that's left are the branches hanging in space. This is, of course, an impossibility, and in a short time, each of the branches will have used up the little life that was in itself and will have fallen away. And so now I say unto you, my friends, you have just heard the nature of error. What is the nature of error? It's a mental, universal belief in that there is an I, a me, a mine, separate and apart from God. That's the whole nature of error. But the nature of God is ising. And what's the nature of prayer? Die out of that personal sense of self, stand still, stand stock still where there is no personal sense of self functioning, and behold, be a beholder as consciousness lives itself. He says, I, Christ, am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. The Christ is the vine, or the trunk, and we are the branches. Because the... this is not just a theory, some invisible thing up in space somewhere. This is an actual experience. This is an actual experience. When you die out of a personal sense of self, you are lifted into the impersonal self, and you bear witness to Christ in action. You bear witness to God manifesting as individual you. He says, because of the vine, there's no need for us to live off one another or to struggle and fight each other. We are united in the vine. We are one in the Christ. But we go a step further and learn that the Father is the husbandman. God, the universal truth, the universal life, the divine mind, the infinite love, is the husbandman, or the equivalent of the earth in which the tree is rooted and grounded. I and my Father are one. The Father is in me, and I in him. So you see, he gives you the instructions. He says, abide in me, and I in you. But you can't abide in me, and I in you, unless a personal sense of self dies. And when it is not there for that split second, or a minute, or even an hour or a day, when you are in the Spirit is in you, and there's only one there, and it's impersonal. So the personal does not become the impersonal. The personal dies. And then stepping right out of that tomb, you ascend into the impersonal. And now the impersonal lives you. There's only one, and it is impersonal I, Christ. Do you not see, he asks, that our supply is not dependent upon us? No, it's a natural flowing of God ising when there's no you in the way. As a student, you are a branch. Or let's put that another way. Not that when there's no you in the way, but when there's no you, when you're not entertaining a you, then you can see God is ising. God is ising all the time. You can't block it. But you cannot see it when you're looking only at a personal sense of life. When you come out of that tomb, the tomb of the mind, because no illusion is ever externalized, when you come out of the tomb, you behold Christ flowing, God ising. So he says, as a student, you are a branch, and you may temporarily go to a teacher, and then he will be the vine, the Christ. But only, however, if the teacher knows that of himself he is nothing but that vine. It was through this realization that the Master was able to feed and heal the multitudes. It's not dependent upon a you, Y-O-U. It is dependent upon God's grace flowing. After this truth has been demonstrated by your contact with the teacher or practitioner, after you have gained wisdom in the realization that the healing did not come from him but merely through him, from the Father, you are ready for the next step. It is then that you will realize the invisible Christ is not a person, not even Jesus, but the Christ is the very invisible part of me. Therefore, I am connected with this invisible part of me, and it in turn is rooted and grounded in God. It is the Son of God. It is the Christ. So the Christ is in the Father, and the Father is in me. That realization is the healing truth. See, no person is doing any healing. No, when you call on someone for help and they step out of a personal sense of self, recognizing there's no personal sense of self over there, there's no personal sense of self here, and then stand stock still and behold Christ ising, they are beholding the Christ, the invisible Christ of you. And one with God is a majority, and so one with that awareness, with the awareness of God ising, one with that awareness makes it so, or brings it into awareness. So he says, you may be wondering if there's anything you might do or not do that would stop this flow of good. And he says, yes, there is one thing. You can forget that there is an invisible. You can begin to believe that I am separate. That doesn't really stop the flow. It stops your awareness of the flow. Once you step out of an awareness of the invisible and back into feeling that I'm this visible person and struggling for my existence, and I haven't got enough supply, and I haven't got enough companionship or the right companionship, and my health is lacking, then you're living in a personal sense of self. You're back under the law. Grace is still functioning on a higher level, but you moved. Grace didn't move. Now, what do you do? Well, you have to go back to the principles. I've got to turn within in meditation, and I have got to find a way to die out of a personal sense of self, because it's killing me. I've got to find a way to accept the promise of the Father. I am the vine. And sometimes it means you have to read a little bit to remember, oh yes, that's right. Sometimes it means you have to contemplate a little bit. Sometimes it means you have to listen to a little bit of a talk. Eventually you won't have to do any of those things. You'll just have to close your eyes and it'll flow from within. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit, for without me ye can do nothing. Yes, of course ye can do nothing, because there is no ye. That's a mental image. Now he says, unless you recognize your conscious oneness with the invisible vine, the Son of God of you, you can do nothing. And he has that in italics, so he feels that's pretty important. Unless you recognize your conscious oneness with the invisible. You have to be consciously aware of the invisible living itself as you, through you. Then you are living by grace. But if you don't, you will be a branch using up its little old 80 years of 10 and 10 of life. And finally you will dry up and fall off because you did not abide in God and let His Word abide in you. Now His Word is this awareness. It's a living thing. It's just not a word that you hear in your mind. That's still on the personal sense level. No, His Word, capital W, Word, is this invisible movement. He says, always remember, even in your direst troubles, in your worst diseases, or in your most dreadful sin, that you are still connected with the invisible vine, and that it in turn is rooted and grounded in the whole of the Father. The very nature of God prevents God from withholding its flow. You see, you've got to retrain yourself out of these beliefs, these theological beliefs that I can do something to move God or please God. God is no respecter of persons because God doesn't see persons. God looks and sees the first chapter of Genesis, a perfect creation in His image and likeness. And then here are you up in a mind playing these mind games with these mental images of a personal sense of self, trying to get God to come in there and change something. It says, if ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Not ask for a better automobile, or give me a more beautiful home. No, he says. Ask for the continuous realization of omnipresence. You see? You don't go to God for something material. You go to God for the awareness, the continuous awareness, realization of omnipresence, of God ising everywhere. Ye ask and receive not because ye ask amiss. God is spirit, and one does not ask spirit for material things. You see, you must come up higher than asking for something for a personal sense of life. You've got to come up higher than asking for your personal supply, your personal health, your personal companionship. God is no respecter of persons. Your Father is glorified only in proportion as you bear much fruit. But it has to be His fruit, His life, His supply, His understanding, His wisdom, His love, His companionship. So he says, if you do have a good home or a good income and begin to believe that you are responsible for them because of your understanding or goodness, don't be surprised if you're cut off from them. Now this is not a punishment because you got a big head, you got a big ego, and you forgot to give God the credit. Don't you see? Get out of that belief that God punishes or rewards. Throw it away. There's no such God. Ever, ever, ever. The reason why you're cut off from them is not because you now have a big ego and God's mad at you for taking credit for what He did. No, it's because you've gone back to living in a personal life. I did this. This is mine. Me. Aren't I special? Now you've got a personal sense of self and God over there. Congratulations, you've separated yourself right back into the illusion in between your ears. So it's not a punishment. You took yourself out of the flow of grace. If I walk back in the house and I step out of the sunshine and I'm back here in the house where it's shady and cool, but I'd like to feel that warmth, I'm not being punished. What happened? I took myself out of the sun. If you go to where you're taking all the credit, just as if you go to where you're doing all the bad. Both sides are the same. It's a personal sense of self. You've stepped out of the flow of spirit. Now you're back in the consciousness of a person. Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. When you realize that the glory of God is showing forth through this good that has come to you, then you may expect even greater fruitage, because you have acknowledged the source. Now, you're not being rewarded because you prayed the right way. You're not being rewarded because you recognized God verbally or even in your prayers. Thank you, God, for this, that, and the other. You don't get rewarded for that. No, but you're standing in the consciousness of watching God flowing, God ising. And so even more will is as you stand there. As you stand there, dead to personal sense of life and alive to the spirit flowing. There is no reward or punishment. You live by the principle or you don't. He says, how can you love God if you believe that he is withholding some good or is punishing you? You can love and honor God only if you can see him as glorious, infinite life, life unfettered, unhindered, and unaffected by man's virtue or transgression. God's not affected by a personal you, ever. So every time you see an individual in some form of sin, disease, lack, limitation, deformity, or even death, catch a glimpse of the invisible vine, of the invisible Christ, the same one that you experience in your meditation. See it there as well. See it as omnipresence. It is then that you are loving God supremely and your neighbor as yourself, because you are knowing the same truth about your neighbor that you are knowing about yourself. Now, here's the part we don't like to hear. Your enemy is also your neighbor, so be sure to include your enemy. See? Now look. The scripture says, if you come to the altar to pray, and there remember that you have aught against your brother, or remember that you have an enemy, go and be reconciled, and then come and offer your prayer. You see? Why? Why? Is that because you're a goody-two-shoes? And you'll be good enough to approach God? No, it has nothing to do with that. It means you must see the invisible Christ where this enemy appeared. Drop that personal sense of enemy and see the same invisible, impersonal Christ forming itself. Then you can come into your inner temple and find that impersonal self there. Because you've dropped a personal sense of self here or there, and now you have only the impersonal Christ. You have been reconciled. We put so much of God into religion, we don't understand the spiritual way of life. But all of these old superstitious beliefs have to go. The answer is to die out of that. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man laid down his life for his friends. I have no life. God is my life. And that's what we're talking about. Stepping out of the tomb. If you love God, then lay down that personal sense of self, of life, here, there, everywhere. Lay it down. He says, when you give up that personal sense of life and say, this is not my life, this is the life of God, which is mine, you automatically bid goodbye to 60-70-year span and are resurrected in the realization of good as the infinity of your life. Yes, he means this. He doesn't mean that when you come to this realization, you will no longer live 60 or 70 years. He means you'll step out of a personal sense of 60 or 70 years and into the impersonal infinite life, whether living on this plane or on the next. There will be no more break. There won't be a break in a forgetfulness and coming back and living another 60 or 70 personal years. That's gone now. You have found your own eternal life, an eternal, infinite, impersonal Christ life. And you stand in it, whether you walk through the veil into the invisible or walk back out. There's no more break in consciousness. You are a continuous God experience. God-ism. So, he says, there can be no personal goodness, health, or wealth. To abide in this truth is to live and move and have your being in this consciousness of your oneness with the Christ and the Christ's oneness with the Father. And then he warns you here, he says, every time you think thoughts of hopelessness and despair, it is as if you were acknowledging you are a branch cut off from the vine. Yes, you are acknowledging a personal sense of self. Yet all the time, the Christ is right here where you are. It is within you and it is omnipresence. I go to prepare a place for you that where I am, there ye may be also. You may be wondering, where is I am? Wherever you are, there is the vine, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. So, always remember, God does not give and God does not withhold. It just continuously is. That's the principle. There's two principles here in this chapter. Three, really. The nature of error, which is the belief in a personal sense of self, of life, asking God to add to it. And there's the nature of God, which is that God does not give or withhold, does not punish or reward. God just continuously is. And then finally, the nature of prayer is to die out of a personal sense of self, and in the stillness which exists after the death, that is prayer. Into that stillness, that vacuum with no personal self, flows the impersonal Christ, living itself. That is how you have answered prayer. He says, the Christ is not sitting in judgment. What was the mission of the Master? Go and show John again those things which ye do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. Christ is here to resurrect from the grave and to bring about the ascension. You see how subtly he did that. We're at the end of the chapter, and he's saying very plainly, Christ is here to resurrect out of a personal sense of self, out of the tomb of a personal life, and ascend into itself, the Christ. He says, if you return to the old material state of consciousness and do not abide in the Word, you will be purged again and again. But God is not punishing you, nor are you living nor are you rewarded for living in that consciousness. No, you are living a personal life, and then you get duality. When you do not abide in this invisible, in the awareness of this invisible, when you abide only between your ears in a personal sense of self, you're living in duality. You have good, you have evil. You have young, you have old. You have rich, you have poor. You have healthy, you have sick. You have 60 or 70 years. You have a personal sense of life. And with it comes all that goes with a personal sense of life. And you're standing out here feeling separate and trying to get God to do something for you and might as well be a million miles away. When actually it is. It's in a different consciousness. Might as well say in a different universe. Ah. He says, you can be a prodigal 12 times if you wish, but you will pay the penalty, and the prodigal is a personal sense of life. If you go back to the belief of a selfhood separate and apart from God, a branch hanging in space, you will bring upon yourself lack and limitation of supply, health, strength, and eternality. Okay, but are you being punished? No. No, you're standing in a personal sense of life, and it is a branch that will wither. But, he says, if ye abide in me, in the I within you, and my word abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. But remember, what are you to ask for? The continuous realization of omnipresence. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. So shall ye be my disciples. And so, if you would like to be a disciple of the living Christ, he has given you the instructions. Did you know that? Did you know that you can be a disciple? Or did you think the disciples lived 2,000 years ago and that's that? He tells you plainly, plainly. Die. Die out of a personal sense of self, if only in your meditation at first. Stand stock still. Have no personal ideas, beliefs, opinions, no personal theories, no personal prayers. Have no person reaching out to God. Have no person. And in that stillness, when the person is not functioning, when there's an emptiness, a vacuum, then here comes the awareness of a movement of spirit, of God ising. This is your Christ self. You don't earn it. You don't deserve it. You can't block it off. You can never be bad enough to lose it. No, all that was ever necessary was that you die. And in the death of that self, a new self arises, like the phoenix from the ashes, and I, Christ, live. Not a personal sense of self, but an infinite, impersonal, eternal self. And I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. I will be thee. Never again will you die and be born. Always, you will be Christ living itself, the one perfect, infinite, eternal consciousness living itself, and ye shall see a new heaven. Ye shall see a new Jerusalem, a new self. You will receive a new name, which no one knows except you who have received it. And so thank you for sharing this experience with me today. Let us drop the me and drop the you, go within and experience the I. Amen.